You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
The UFC is right back at it, right back to the UFC Apex tomorrow night for UFC 250, headlined by Amanda Nunes, who looks to make some more history in her storied career as she defends her featherweight title against the number one contender, Felicia Spencer. What's going on, everybody? Mike Heck here from MMAfighting.com. This is the official UFC 250 preview show, virtually alongside Jose Youngs, who is in Las Vegas. Jose, you've gone from Jacksonville to Las Vegas. I believe this will be your fifth event covered since the UFC has returned to action during this COVID-19 pandemic. We got a title fight in the main event tomorrow night featuring the greatest women's MMA fighter of all time against a gritty, tough contender. The bantamweight division is going to be showcased. We have some fascinating storylines. This is one of those events, Jose, at least in my opinion, that early on the feeling was this card was sort of eh, but I feel that people are starting to realize that there's a lot to like on this card. Is there not?
I love this card. I mean, people complaining in like comment sections and online and social media and in person be like, oh, this card sucks. I'm like, y'all are crazy. Like the greatest female fighter of all time is fighting in the main event, looking to make history. And then there's a lot of specifically a lot of really high level bantamweight fights against former champions, former title challengers, future title challengers. So yeah, I really like this fight card as a whole. People complaining about last week, I get. People complaining about next week, I get. But like this fight, I really like this fight. People are just all of a sudden like, you start off UFC 249, one of the greatest cards ever put together, and then you get a couple fight nights of people all of a sudden complaining the next pay-per-view is not on the same level as 249, because that's almost impossible to do month to month. But I thoroughly like this card.
This type of thing happens every year, by the way, pandemic or not. But let's start with the main event for tomorrow night. We got pretty in-depth on this fight on the debut episode of Between the Links on Tuesday, which you can go check out on this page or wherever you're listening to this right now. But let's talk Amanda Nunes, Jose. She's done it all to this point, but she has the chance to do something that no other fighter in UFC history has ever done, and that's successfully defend multiple titles in multiple weight classes while holding those titles simultaneously. And just saying that seems like a lot to process, but she has a tougher test in front of her than most people are giving credit to. Yeah. Your thoughts the day before this women's featherweight title fight?
I mean, I'm still picking Amanda to win. She's the greatest female fighter of all time. I know our own Casey Lydon is on record saying he thinks Spencer will win. But I think Amanda, her media day when she's like, everyone has holes, I'm human. So she is fully aware of what her weaknesses are, and the fact that she's like, her camps are very structured towards her opponents, so especially down there at ATT. So the fact, when I heard that, I was like, she knows that there are weaknesses. She knows Spencer's strengths play into those weaknesses. I would have to imagine, because she was supposed to fight last month, and now she gets another month to train. I would imagine she's worked a lot on filling those gaps in her. So yeah, I would have to favor Amanda Nunes, but I'm not, if Spencer wins, I think Spencer's skills from a karate taekwondo background mixed with some very heavy top game, excellent ground and pound, and some great grappling. I she has more than just a puncher's chance against the greatest female fighter of all time.
When we talk about Amanda Nunes, silly, we hear about pound for pound lists. And I'm generally not a big fan of these conversations because it's so subjective and you can look at it in so many different ways. But if Amanda Nunes does defeat Felicia Spencer tomorrow night, retains the title and adds to that legacy, where does that put her on that list in your opinion?
It would depend on how she does it. If she just squeaks out like a lackluster decision, which I don't think is going to happen, then that's a conversation that we're going to have. But if she just goes out there and axe kicks Felicia Spencer and knocks her dead in the first 30 seconds, could be another conversation. But then again, for all we know, we could get like a Gustafson John Jones where she looks human in the first two rounds and then guts it out and pulls out the big win at the end. And then we're talking about one of the greatest fighters of all time, not just male or female. So she's already in my mind the greatest female fighter of all time. I think there's a very clear argument that she's top 10 ever in UFC history, especially considering who she's beaten and how she's beaten them. But she's, again, coming off a decision against Jermaine Durand, and all of a sudden, you said it yourself, we're very like immediate thoughts on fighters. So like she knocked out Holly Holm, she knocked out Chris Cyborg, and then she's fought Jermaine Durand to a decision. She's not that good. I'm like, y'all are nuts. Y'all are nuts if that's how you're thinking. So it depends on how she wins. After Saturday, I'll have a better.
I did want to add about this fight because people complain about the main event, but I did have someone message me on Instagram the other day, and this individual told me that it's not the fight itself he's looking at negatively. It's the fact that Felicia Spencer is in this spot so early in her career. And if she goes out and gets beat or axe kicks, like you said, or finish like this, this will stunt her evolution and growth in a big way before it really ever gets going. Do you subscribe to that theory at all?
No. Well, how many fights has Dominic Reyes had in his career? How many? Well, look what he did against John Jones. Like, come on. Like this, it's, I don't like Kamaru Usman has far less fights than Jorge Masvidal. And look at, he's champion already. Colby Covington doesn't have a ton of fights under his league. He's been fighting in the UFC for a long time, but he debuted fairly early into his career. So no, I don't subscribe to that. Like Felicia Spencer is the rightful number. Who else would get this title shot at 145? Like Megan Anderson is the only other one, and Felicia Spencer beat her, and not only just beat her, stopped her. Like Felicia Spencer fought Chris Cyborg to a 3-round decision. Like say what you want, that's bad for your health, and she came out she got beat up, but she wasn't, she got a lot of fans from that, a lot of momentum. So no, I don't subscribe to that whatsoever.
Yeah, I thought it was just a different question and a different theory that I've seen in regards to this fight throughout this process. But we move to the co-main event, which has a lot of people still scratching their heads. We have Cody Garbrandt, the former UFC bantamweight champion, is returning after 15 months away from the octagon to take on Rafael dos Anjos. Now, the reason people aren't thrilled this is the co-main event is because of the fight before it, Aljamain Sterling versus Corey Sandhagen. That's definitely a number one contender fight. I have to say, Jose, and I'm not sure how you feel about it, but while I agree that Sterling versus Sandhagen should absolutely get that shine, after what Cody Garbrandt had to tell me and other members of the media yesterday at the virtual media day, I am much more in on this fight than I was maybe a week or so ago.
I mean, honestly, too, if there are both fights for 3 rounds, I don't think it matters where they're placed on the card. Yeah, it is on paper and like optically, being the co-main event is a bigger deal. You get on the poster and everything. But you think Aljamain Sterling, Corey Sandhagen care? They're going to win, and the winner will fight for the title. That is much more important. Whether they fight the first or the co-main event, still 3 rounds. It's still Corey Sandhagen, Aljamain Sterling. It just depends on when they fight. So optically, sure. I honestly, outside of the co-main event, I would rather have Sandhagen Sterling headline next week. And then Calvillo could be the co-main event. So I get it. But Cody Garbrandt, former champion, is very popular. Of the four, Sterling, Sandhagen, Garbrandt, and the Sunsau, I would comfortably say Cody Garbrandt is the most recognizable and most popular amongst the fans. So say what you want about deserving, undeserving. I don't think it doesn't. It's not as big of a deal to me as other people are making it.
Here's one thing people are concerned about, because the UFC can sometimes do UFC things. And you and I, we talk about this all the time. We don't like to look into the future, but Rafael dos Anjos has the top five of this division for a long, long time. He has fought pretty much everybody at this point. Cody Garbrandt, like you said, is one of the big stars of this division, still has the potential to be an even bigger star. I'm not asking for like specific matchups per se, but where does the winner go from here in the grand scheme of things at 135? And is there any chance, back to the concern, that the winner can jump the queue with an impressive performance?
Jump the queue, I would say no, because Dana was pretty adamant at the scrum we just had with him that he was like, is this a number one contender? He's like, yeah, number one contender. Jan Aldo are going to fight, but then like you got Marlon Moraes. Like the winner could fight Marlon, or like Dominic Cruz is all of a sudden back. Frank Yeager supposedly back. So literally pick any one of those bantamweights I just named, whoever's not fighting, fight the winner of the co-main event, or Cody Garbrandt even teased dropping down to flyaway. So it wouldn't even matter at that point who he fights at 135. So like you're telling me you wouldn't want to watch Cody Garbrandt at Sun Tzu, or like Cody Garbrandt, Dominic Cruz part two as a headliner of a fight night, or Cody Garbrandt, Marlon Moraes. Like I love all those fights. So the bantamweight division is so, so excellent right now that it's one of the most top heavy divisions right now in terms of clutter, but I kind of like this mini tournament we're having. And not to mention, like I'm sure we're going to talk about it later, there's a lot of other high-level bantamweight fights on the night too.
Yeah, of course, we have to talk about Sterling versus Sandhagen. This is the fight that everyone has seemed to circle. Everyone seems to have their eye on. And for good reason, obviously. There's a lot on the line here. This fight sells itself. You don't need us to sell for you. But besides all of that, this is a really interesting fight. What sticks out to you the most when you hear Aljamain Sterling versus Corey Sandhagen?
This is Corey Sandhagen's is basically a prototype. Like, he's the next evolution of Dominick Cruz. Like, his footwork, his striking, his overall fight IQ is so sharp. He's a well-spoken cat. So he's directly modeled, but he's made it known was his favorite fighter to watch. And Aljamain Sterling has been in the UFC for a long, long time, and he always wanted one of those big title fights. So I'm viewing this as Aljamain Sterling, unbelievable on the ground. Like, he has some of the nastiest chokes in the world, elite wrestling. And yeah, he's been knocked dead by Marlon Moraes, but Corey Sandhagen versus Aljamain Sterling, like, take out title implications, take out co-main events, main events, whatever. I'll watch these two spar. This is just a high-level martial arts competition that happens to be inside of an octagon. Like, I don't care if it's for the title or co-main event, number one contender, whatever. I just want to see these guys fight because it's so high-level.
I love this fight a lot, as everybody watching and listening to this loves this fight as well. There's a lot of fights on the card that are really, really good. So for the sake of time, Jose, because I know you're going to get kicked out of there shortly, let's dive a little bit deeper. Per usual, it's time for the under-the-radar fight of the night heading into tomorrow night.
Well, going into this, I would have to say the Sugar Sean and Eddie Weiland fight, because Sugar Sean's like tabbed as like one of those future, not just like big deals, but like superstar that the UFC's putting the machine behind, a la the Conor McGregors and the Ronda Rouseys and everything, and Francis Ngannou. But, I mean, Cody Stamann and Brian Kelleher has to be the story everyone's talking about right now. I mean, Kelleher, this is his second fight in a handful of weeks. He's obviously a longtime co-host of the A-side. Me and him share affinity for the Tiger's Eye Crystal. But then Stamann's story of the passing of his brother and him deciding to fight through it has really, like, I was really into this fight before, but now that is a lot of emotion and baggage to carry into a professional fight. And Kelleher and him kind of made this fight on Twitter before Kelleher's last fight. He's like, oh, after I get through Azure, I'll fight you next. And lo and behold, that's what happened. So, yeah, it's going to be a little emotional when that fight happens. So I'm gonna have to circle that one, as if people are looking for a storyline to attach to and latch onto, Stamann Kelleher has all the makings of, like, waterworks after that one.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you on Stamann, obviously coming in with a very heavy heart against Brian Kelleher, who is on a roll right now. Plus, he's sharing the card with Sean O'Malley, which makes things even more interesting. I know with the matchup, O'Malley is a little more intrigued, a little more fascinated with how that fight goes down. Maybe Kelleher is on his radar after all, if he can keep the streak going. But to me, Juicy Arfamiga versus Alex Perez, what an awesome fight that is at 125 pounds. Rolls. That is completely under the radar, buried on the prelims, as our own Casey Lydon said during the weigh-in show. And with everything that happened yesterday, and I was looking forward to this fight anyways, Ian Hynes was on the card, off the card, then replaced by Anthony Ivey. Then, as our own Damon Martin reported last night, he's back on the card against Gerald Meerschaert. I don't remember ever seeing something like this happen 48 hours before a fight, where a guy was in, out, and back in, especially, you know, with COVID-19 and the pandemic going on. In fact, I'm going to be speaking with Gerald Meerschaert in a little while to see where his head is at after all this mayhem. This is such a wild story, Jose.
It's welcome to 2020. like people are talking about like the quality of video and people getting in the way of the cameras. I'm like, sorry, this is 2020. This is the UFC in the amidst a pandemic and a movement that is much more above and beyond sports at this point. So welcome to the world.
Jose, I assume another COVID test in isolation awaits you, right?
Oh yes, I got to get there. I think 6:45 a.m. tomorrow. I think it would be my fifth COVID test in the last few months covering UFC fights, and then quarantining inside a hotel room. You named it.
Well, we appreciate all of your hard work as always, sir. We will have all of your UFC 250 coverage throughout the event. And after the event, with our post-fight coverage, we will have you covered across the board over here at MMAfighting.com. With that said, we're putting a bow on another preview show. For Jose Youngs, I am Mike Heck. Appreciate all of you guys watching this, and we will see you tomorrow night.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.